Anybody home?
What kind of party is this, anyway?
A very strange party, if you'll pardon the expression.
Radio General Erko.
Yes, sir, but that's not what's so peculiar.
Put it on the bridge speakers, Lieutenant.
Pay more attention.
DJ 7 L.
I thought it might be static, but not on every channel. Tend to sound like...
Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.
Hill.
Hear me and hear me.
Wait a minute, what's that?
I demand an explanation.
Look at that one, bigger than the rest. He looks like...
Invasion by creatures from space confirmed. New York City may be their next objective.
Just stop.
And get out of here.
Getting some very strange
reports
from
the
sea bay level.
In
what way strange?
Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.
Listen to this.
You ever notice how like conservative talk radio just has like the most like dope ass intro music?
I've never noticed that before.
You would think we were a sports radio talk show or something like that, but no. That beat was courtesy of DJ7L. I'd like to thank him, DJ7L of Czarface. Thank you for that dope beat.
That was amazing. How you doing, Sequoia?
I'm all right, Brockton. How are you?
I'm doing great. We got a pretty fun show coming up, right? I mean,
I feel
are
we
you
do.
Excited?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know who you're talking to? Do you know who we're gonna be interviewing?
I think we're talking to Matt Fraction.
Matt fucking Fraction. I didn't. Okay.
I know. It was kind of weird. Danny asked me to do this, and I was just like, You know, I don't do this for a living, right?
He told me to interview Joel about the models.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought I was here for.
Yeah.
Matt fucking Fraction.
I'm surprised. I didn't know it was going to be me and you doing this together.
I didn't either.
But we're keeping our social distance.
Oh, man. I can barely see you.
Yeah.
Neither one of us are small cats either. But
no.
We're like, looking through a very, hey, down there.
This is a very safe, secure podcast.
It most certainly is.
Yeah.
And let's get it started. Let's call Matt Fraction.
All right.
Hey, what's up?
Hey.
Hey.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I was literally just looking at the Toy Vault page. And
it's so, I mean, I was like, all right, well, at least I'm leaving here with some amazing toys, because there's a Halloween 3 box set that I didn't know existed.
Yes.
I was like, well, that's, I just start making a little pile for myself.
Now, Matt, are you a toy collector?
Collector overstates it. fetishist, maybe.
Yeah. You have some toys.
Yeah. But it's sort of like cool shit I like, but not, I don't have a problem. I'm a social toy collector. If someone has toys, I'll have toys, but I never buy them for myself.
Right. Oh, no.
Wait, do you buy them for like your kids and you just live through them vicariously?
I have sometimes, which is its own like a real test of like parenthood.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like you know what? No, you enjoy that. It's better with you playing with it than it just sitting on dad's bookshelf. No, you go with it. Yeah.
Take it. Play with it. Yeah, I had my daughter. She was probably 5 or 6, and she was like, "Can I play with this the Millennium Falcon?" You know, it was like my Millennium Falcon when I was a kid, and I played with it when I was a kid. So I was like, "Yes, yes, yes, you should." And I handed it to her, yeah. And she took it, and she just threw it. She said, fly. And it just smashed into pieces. And I was just like, oh, shit. It got me real bad. Yeah, I was like, but it helped me. It's like you said, like it's a testament to parenting. Like you're just like, you got to let go. It's like they're toys. They're toys. If there's certain stuff, you know, you keep that away, but you got to play with them. That's the fun part.
Yeah, for whatever reason, my parents drilled into my head when I was little that like I needed to hold on to the Star Wars, like they would hold on to your Star Wars toys so your kids can play with them.
Whoa.
And for whatever reason it did, but I did. And they have.
That's so forward so, like, thinking.
Yeah, it was the weirdest. I mean, they're not like in I don't have any of the weapons or anything like that. I didn't have like an archivist's, you know, but like, yeah, for whatever reason they just held on to them. And then my kids got old enough and that like now they're, you know, the same shit my parents yelled at me to get off my floor, I yell at my kids to get off their floor.
That is, you know how different a story that is from usually what people say. Most people's parents like chuck their toys. That was the thing. Like everybody lost toys. Sequoia, did you lose toys like with your parents?
Oh God, man. Like that first run of He-Man.
Yeah.
I had so many of them because I kept losing it. Like I remember having like 3 or 4, like just the basic He-Man figure. I kept losing it over and over and over again. Oh. And they get me a new one to replace it.
To just bring them in. But did they like hold on to them? Like, did you hold on to them?
No. My mom's rule was basically whenever Christmas rolled around and I got new toys, I had to give away some of my old toys to like neighborhood kids.
One in, one out?
Yeah.
I know that one.
So like Christmas morning, like I would introduce my new toys to my old toys. That's why the movie Toy Story like got me in the feels, because it's like, yeah, I can relate to that. Like, you know, they had to
say goodbye.
Yeah, but they were going to a better home or a different home or whatever. Somebody else got to enjoy them.
Right on,
dude. I have so many.
Did you see the Steven Soderbergh movie Behind the Candelabra with Michael Douglas and Matt Damon? Is like the Liberace documentary.
No,
and like it's Matt Damon is like Liberace's young lover, and it opens with like a party where they first meet, but Cheyenne Jackson is also there, and he's the old young lover, and he's just snarling and bitchy at Matt Damon. The minute Matt Damon walks in, he's like, oh, "That's the," and like I just have that image of your like these toys just knowing like, "Oh, I see."
That's Christmas at Sequoia's house.
Mask. Huh? I see,
dude. I have so many like
you don't want that cracker back.
Dude, I have so many like sad stories like when it comes to toys and stuff. Like I tried telling one when we did the live broadcast about how as a kid I wanted Voltron and we couldn't afford it. And we were in the middle of moving. Like, so all of the toys I did have were in storage. So I had nothing. And I Voltron was like the thing at the time. And I wanted one so bad, but we couldn't quite get it because my mom was trying to save all the money to buy this new house. And basically I found clothespins and I painted them the color of each lion.
Oh.
And I took rubber bands and like toothpicks, and like the toothpick was his sword.
You made a Voltron. I made a Voltron.
Because I wanted one so bad.
That's hardcore, man.
And she felt so sorry for me the following Christmas. Like she bought me like 3 or 4 like various sizes of Voltron.
She was like, clothespin Voltron.
Yeah.
We gotta do something about
pathetic.
This. Man. Matt, did your parents hold on to it? Did your parents keep it or did you take it with you?
No, they held on to it. We moved a lot, which is so it's weird, but like that stuff, they made a point of it.
Wow.
It was so formative for me. Other shit would kind of like get sold or given away and stuff like that. Like I have a very clear memory of like giving all of my G.I. Joe stuff to a kid, like everything, you know what I mean? Like I have memories of that, or like selling stuff or, the more I got into comics, like, then there would be stores where you could like, oh, you'll buy toys. I can give you toys for credit and stuff, you know,
yes.
So like it kind of became a little, but no, the Star Wars stuff by and large stuck around the whole time. I don't think it was everything, but it was a lot.
Yeah, for them to be moving that much so they're packing that stuff up every single time. They're like taking it and making sure those boxes make it to the next place. That's kind of unheard of.
At some point, they all just went into one box and sort of stayed there for 20 years.
Right.
But like I think, but yeah, once like eighth or ninth grade rolled around, it was all just kind of like,
doop.
But yeah, so the weirdest sensation of my kid playing with the same, I remember. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
So we're all roughly about the same age. You probably had a lot of the same toys, right?
Yeah.
I'm so far so good. Yeah, I'm 44.
Okay, I'm 43.
So 44. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Same.
Yeah.
So we probably, yeah.
But like, I remember over the course of a year chipping away at Voltron, I had the cars, the 25 cars. Mm-hmm. And I remember you could get, I think there were three sets of five, maybe that's maybe five sets of five.
It was three sets of five. There were like 15.
Three, okay, so it's 15, not 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I remember like just chipping away and then having like, it's a leg. Like making two legs and like imagining this shit like that.
One day it's all going to be together.
Yeah. If only I had 4,000 clothespins, I could finish my project.
And some paint.
Well, let me ask this. I mean, you know, we're all men of a certain age. You know, we've probably played with the same toys, had watched the same cartoons, and you know, you being the man you are, obviously, I think we can all agree that we're comics fans. When and what, like, when you got into comics, as far as reading them, collecting them, like, what was the book? What was the moment? What was the year for you?
The first comic I can remember buying is my dog Oscar, by the way.
Hey, what's going on, good boy?
Batman 316, which is so funny, but like that's the first comic I remember getting. I remember Mad Magazine always being around. Like I was always an artistic kid. I always drew everywhere constantly. So like comics were kind of around everywhere constantly. I remember reading like Peanuts collections and like Doonesbury. Like I didn't realize that Doonesbury was a daily strip because I lived in Chicago and they put Doonesbury on the editorial page. So it wasn't in the cartoons.
Ah.
It was in the comics section. So I kept trying, like, I was aware of like the rhythms because it was so, but it, like, if I remember, like, so I was like, you know, four or five and had like all these really micro specific political references of the 70s. Which is funny that now my kid has got like loves Bloom County, Henry, my oldest, and is full of weird 80s arcana. Like one night at dinner, he goes, "Do you guys think Gene Kirkpatrick was ever really happy?"
Oh man, Bloom County. Yeah, but I loved Bloom County.
Star Wars, I saw Star Wars and I must like I think I was two, almost three, like doing the math of where the release was and where I was. And like, I remember like, well, that was the Christmas after, you know, like I think I was like 3 years old when I saw Star Wars and that was it. I was just like gone. So that was kind of the real, but then there's Star Wars comics, right?
Yeah.
I lived in Chicago and my dad knew cops that were like a little gray market. So like he would buy, we had bootlegs of Star Wars Empire and Jedi on VHS.
Oh, that is, man, that's the good stuff right there. So, that's everybody's coming to your house.
Yeah, and like, but it was just all like literally always like I could recreate the original trilogy as an audio book for you right now. Like it was that just like thousands of hours of that kind of shit. But Star Wars and then just literally anything my, you know, parents would get me to shut me up, I think.
Yeah, so did that lead into the toys too? Is that like, so Star Wars and then obviously Star Wars toys, was that like
Yeah.
Yeah, that was real big. Yeah. That was like, I think I remember that being like one of the very first like sets of toys where I was like, I love these toys. Like these are like so, like I love, because you see the movie and then you had like the AT-AT or whatever it was that you're just like, oh my God, they had everything. Yeah. So it was like being able to put all that stuff together was.
I was aware of the toys before the movie, and because there's another kid in the apartment building I lived in that had them. And my parents were trying to explain to me what a movie was, And like, it's like a TV. Like, I remember having the specific image of a giant television that everybody would sit in front of, like in like a dark living room. Like, cause they were like, oh, it's like, it's a big TV everybody watches. And I was like, oh, okay. So I imagined our TV really big in like a stadium.
It's a kick-ass image.
Yeah, but like, so it was much going to see what a movie was as it was going to see Star Wars. I got a nun told me to shut up. That's how obsessed I was. The day I was going, I apparently got on her very last raw nerve. And I remember thinking, 3 years old, you're just jealous because I'm going to see Star Wars.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and there's something like the textures, you know, like the detail. You know, when you're a kid, you just get obsessed with like the little details. And like, I remember the Y-Wing, getting the Y-Wing when I turned 8 or 9 and just like touching it, just like it was Braille and I was trying to read it or something, like all the, like just that kind of, that stuff just sent me, you know?
Oh yeah. You still, I love looking at those toys now and seeing that kind of stuff where you're like, you look at it and you're like, I remember that specific piece of the Millennium Falcon. Like, I remember how much I loved that piece. Like just the floorboard, just the way it fit back in there, you know, being obsessed about putting that thing back.
And you'll be this, and you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. You can find some fucking weird piece of plastic and be like, oh yeah, no, that's that fell off of, that's the left strut.
Absolutely.
On the AT-ST fell off. And yeah, no, you snap the gun back in and it's fine.
It pops like, right back on top. Like, yep. Oh, you know it.
Anybody
you know
else
exactly
just looks
where
like a weird piece of gray plastic. No. That's the battery case for the A-Wing. Jesus
I've been
Christ.
Looking for that. Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. It's burned into your brain forever.
Yeah.
It's probably taking up space we need for other things, you know? Because, like, I think, I remember that stuff so well. But yeah, math, forget it. But, like, the toys, the battery case, the anything about it, like, I could tell you about that stuff right now. The decals. I remember, like, having, you know, being, there's certain decals where I would want to put it on there. And if I put it on in the wrong place, I would be so upset with myself because I'm like, oh, I've ruined the toy. Tearing those things off was impossible.
And I got into like models, and then they had the decals like you have to put in water.
Yes,
and then those are the worst.
They were the worst.
Just the fucking worst.
Okay,
I'm convinced that was Japanese revenge for the Second World War. They were like, we're gonna get them.
We're gonna get them back. It's pretty brilliant of them. They're like, because
I mean, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna drive every parent in America crazy.
It's a different kind of water torture. it got me hours and hours of it.
It works. It works. You know what? You know?
Yeah.
Well played.
Absolutely. Do you have any like modern toys that are like, I mean, like what's your, like there's anything like that you're like, man, I still kind of feel like I just got this new blah blah and it is kind of giving me that same feeling of nostalgia or that same kind of like, oh, I love this toy.
You know, weirdly enough, and again, it's kind of Star Wars related. Not really. And again, part of it is just knowing I'm a collector and an addictive one at that.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me is just understanding what tenuous grip I have on finance is so easily derailed. Like, I resisted vinyl for years. I remember when like vinyl, like when it kind of became a thing of my friends started to go like crate diving on weekends and stuff, just being like, oh no, I can't do that.
Not this.
I'll never stop. You know? So, but now that I'm a little older and two, now that like, I think now that our age have kind of ascended to the maker class, and it's cool, like Reaction, and like there's stuff where you're like, oh yeah, no, of course I want a Philly Fanatic action figure. Why the fuck not? Like, and I have a job, I can pay for it. At least I had a job until, you know, world ended 2 weeks ago. But we were at Disneyland. It was my daughter's Christmas present. So we did the surprise Disney thing. And I went, my son just wanted to do Galaxy's Edge. He just wanted to do the Star Wars ship. And, you know, you have to sign up. You have to, like, make reservations for the big things. There's a lightsaber workshop. You build a lightsaber. But you have to, like, it's like a reservation. And it's, like, I think it's, like, 10 people or 12 people at a time. And they just – and you go in. And it's a whole – it is – there's cast members that are in character. And you are in, like, a – you – but you – here, I'll show you. Like, you end up building a fucking lightsaber. Oh. And I didn't realize when I was signing up for, I put for me and Henry to go, I didn't realize that I was saying I'm going to take a slot too. I just thought, I was like, no, he'll go and I'll stand behind him. And I was like, oh shit, there's only 12 spaces. I guess I have to go because I'm not going to leave my son, you know, in a Star Wars store by himself.
Sure.
Go through this stuff. But I ended up, and I, like, I hardly resisted, but like,
this is like
a pound of metal, and now see, I don't have the blade in, so the blade doesn't.
What color did you choose?
Well, it was interesting. I chose a purple at first because what I really wanted was white, and you had to buy white in a different store.
Oh.
So you can do at the ceremony, you can do four colors, and then there's a store that has two others. And I wanted a white because I watched this bootleg of Star Wars 10 trillion times. And in my mind, Obi-Wan Kenobi's lightsaber is white.
Oh, yeah. Shit. From the VHS.
Part of it is it's washed, you know, out. It's a part of it's a bad bootleg, and part of it is sometimes the effects didn't get done. So in my mind, like, Obi-Wan's lightsaber is like this kind of silverish thing. So I just wanted a white one. So
did you do everything at Galaxy's Edge? Like, I know there's the droid factory. There's the Millennium Falcon and the, nice.
Oh, damn. We got the crystal.
That is cool.
Yeah. So we did the droid thing. Okay. Yeah. So the whole park, first off, this is another one of those like subliminal things. You go through Frontierland, and it's Old West shit, and you go under a bridge, and at some point the rock changes, and at some point the light fixtures stop. They're not gas lamps. They change. And then, you know, like how Disney pumps ambient sound?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's hidden speakers mm-hmm. everywhere? They start pumping ambient Star Wars sounds.
Mm.
And you're like, and suddenly, like I just got bumps talking about it, but like suddenly you're like, Star Wars. I'm in Star Wars. I know what those sounds are. That's the Foley work. Like that's all right. So, and then like, and you notice the trash cans are different, right? So everything's different. There's an app where like you can play games. They've got Bluetooth shit everywhere. You can hack panels, security panels, and you're gaining points. And there's an actor who's like a spy.
Mm-hmm.
You can find her and talk to her. I've got the droid in my I've got Henry's droid in my backpack, and it's Bluetooth enabled. And every time you walk by droids, they wake up and they beep and they talk at you because I've got this droid in my bag. So like the whole park reacts to you, and you can hack things, and you can like make it's this incredibly immersive. I was there before the big ride opened. By the way, if you're there, you do the Falcon ride, which you should. You want to be pilot right.
Okay.
Pilot right.
That's right? Chewbacca pilot right, seat.
Pilot left, navigator and gunner are the four positions. Front right, hyperspace.
Oh.
And like it is perfect. It is so perfect. The one weird thing they don't have a camera. And I was like, you know, like how on all the Disney rides you can go, no, look, there you are. Like, I was like, oh, how can there not be a camera? Because I guarantee you, me pulling hyperspace would have also been my O face. Like, that would have been.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, it was time. I was like, I've literally waited since I was 2 years old to do this. You know, and
shifted that fucker into hyperspace. Oh.
It's so, and like, you did, like, I just wanted to sit. I didn't even want to, I just wanted to hang out. To hear it and to like, it's so immersive and so incredible. But then like the big ride is open subsequently, and that is a half hour experience.
Really?
Like the Falcon thing, Smuggler's Run or whatever the fuck it is 10, not even 10 minutes, 5 minutes. Now you wait 4.5 hours and then it's you know, over. It's amazing, but it's fast. You can also, if you know what you're doing, you can make it last longer.
Oh.
So it is a game. It is in fact a game, and the length of the ride is responding to your abilities. So the better you are, the longer the ride goes on. But the new one that opened up is like three parts, There's live action. There's two ride changes. There's an AT-AT. Like, it's, I heard it all, but I haven't seen it. And I was just like, I was like a week away from when it opened.
I've heard with Smuggler's Run, there's actually a cheat code that if you, you know, you've got your family or friends with you, that if you, everyone does their part, you know, synchronized, like something happens where I guess the voiceover, it's actually like all of Chewbacca's dialogue. Like, it's normally a person speaking, but you can change it to make it sound like Chewie.
Oh, wow. It's just a Wookiee the whole
time. Yeah, just and all that mess.
You're like, why did we do that?
At one point, we were walking through and Chewbacca came out, and you would have thought it was Mick Jagger. Like, the crowd went insane. Yeah. Like, and like started to, swarmed him. Or and then there's like First Order guys and Stormtrooper guys, and they'll like harass you if they see you on your phone. They are assuming that you are hacking the door panels.
Oh damn!
And they will.
You
I watched them. Like, what do you work? What's that device you're working with? Let me see that thing. Like, this is the funniest fucking shit.
I would be. That would actually scare me. That's like the thing I don't want to happen. Where I don't want the Stormtroopers to come after me. I don't want the Imperial guy. You know, I'd be like, nothing, sir, nothing, putting it away. You know, just.
The droid in my backpack was spazzing out the closer that they came by.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fucking next level. So that was to kind of go and not just be at Galaxy's Edge with my kid who loved it, but to like let myself non-ironically just be in Star Wars. Like, that was pretty great. That was pretty fucking great. Yeah, hi, FAA. I'd like to check my lightsaber. You know, put it in my overhead compartment.
It's very heavy.
I'm not going to let you put this in. No, this stays with me. How dare you?
Because in the seat.
So are your kids as passionate about Star Wars as you are? Because I find with some of my friends, like, there's this disconnect where, like, they're really into it. Maybe for a brief while their kids are into it, and then they kind of fell out of it, or they just don't dig it at all.
I definitely have like a white hot intensity right for those three movies. I never got into the extended universe stuff as much and as hard as some friends have and still are. Like, I never like the novels and stuff like that. I dabbled, but never went all in. But those my son is pretty intense, but he's also, you know, there's a lot of things he's super into, but you know, my son is pretty into it. My daughter is kind of found her first real fan thing with Stranger Things.
Nice.
But then kind of the fun thing about that is to go and show her all the source material, so much of which is geek shit.
Like
to go back and be like, oh, that's like this from Stranger, that's from this, that's from that, you know.
Absolutely. But we've like, been doing that too.
Like, now Henry's getting like, Henry is 12, so we're it's horror time, you know. Like, we watched The Thing for the first time a couple weekends back. He wants to do Army of Darkness this weekend, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's what my daughter's just turned 16, but she's always been into that. Like, she'll go in and out. It's like, if she's into something, then I'm super into it. So if like she loves Halloween 3, I don't care if I love Halloween 3 or not, I now love Halloween 3. You know, it's like I will just get behind it. Like, we had so many Clone Wars toys. It was like, that was the Star Wars that she sort of like latched to because she liked Ahsoka. And so I was like, oh, then we shall buy everything. Like, we have like, you know, it like immediately, like, she was like out of it 2 years later. And now I just have a bunch of Clone Wars toys. But at the time I was like, I love it too.
Yeah, but it doesn't, it's like, it's the easiest, we're the cheapest dates for that shit.
Yes.
And I think our kids know it. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm kind of interested in that. Well, here, have all of it. You know?
That's exactly right.
Like, so, you know, at some point my daughter was like, Dad, I just like, what, it was like a sloth or something. She mentioned liking a sloth, and then like I got her three sloth things for Christmas, and she like sat me down and she's like six. She was like, you know, I like sloths once.
One will do it.
Pat, pat, pat. like that was enough. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I got a little carried away. Okay.
Yeah. My daughter's like turned it around on me now too, where she's like, she knows that I'll do that, so she'll pick up, she'll just do, like, she'll be like, did you know I love Monster Energy drink? I'm like, ew. And then I'm like, I see him in the store, and I'm like, damn, there are a bunch of different colors. I'm like, shit, I don't know. Maybe she lazy, you know? So I was like, man, she did it. She tricked me. Like, I brought three home the other day. I was like, I don't think you've had these three. And she was like, oh my, thank you. You know? So she, to get a little bit older, she starts figuring it out.
Greg Rucka has older kids, and their first Star Wars were the prequels.
Ah.
And so Greg's Star Wars kind of like, oh, my kids are into it, so I'm into it. But that has kind of, you know, so Greg had kids at that phase where he was kind of never not around Star Wars.
Wow.
And then Ellie went off to college and gave Henry a box of Star Wars toys. But it's all cool. Clone Wars stuff. And he's like, who's this guy? I'm like, I have no fucking idea.
That is so funny. Know. I remember seeing the first one, the first prequel, and being like, man, I wish I had a kid, because I would take my kid to see this. And then as I walked out of the theater, I was like, man, I'm so glad that I do not have a kid. That is like, that would have been the worst experience. But I remember that like vividly, being like, oh my God, I really dodged a bullet on that one.
I hate to say it. I fell out of love with Star Wars 2005, man. I hate to say it.
You're just done with it.
I was just so crushed by the prequels, and I was just like, maybe George is right. Maybe this really is for kids, and I just need to let this go and let the younger generation have it.
It's absolutely for kids, but some of it is better than others. Oh, you know what I mean? Like, it's so hard to find kids' books that aren't garbage to read. And then when you find one that actually has like a quality of craft and narrative and character, you're like, oh my God, this is great. All of these kids' books, like there's a reason why Judy Blume is Judy Blume. She's fucking rare.
Right.
Yeah.
And those first three Star Wars movies, I mean, they are masterpieces. And it's like that to me, like, I don't know how you feel about it, but like Die Hard 11 doesn't diminish Die Hard 1 to me. Like, I'm like, I still love Die Hard. Like, it's still like an amazing movie to me. So I still have that love for it. It's just, you know, maybe the.
No, because I mean, I'm excited at the idea of going to Galaxy's Edge. I mean, I'm holding out for whenever they build that hotel. But I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's kind of like it's. I mean, like, I fell back in with, Force Awakens and Rogue One. And then I was a little disappointed with Last Jedi, and then even more disappointed with Rise of Skywalker. And it's just like, I can still like the idea of Star Wars, but, you know, I don't have to be all the way in it. I can still enjoy it for what I love about it.
I had a moment watching Mandalorian like that, where Henry loved it. And I was like, oh, right, it's a space Western for kids. Like, did I want it to be fucking Mad Men? Like, what was I expecting? What fucking peak TV did I really think, finally, a serious extent? Like, no, it's the Mandalorian. It's space cowboys. Like, oh, and that kind of.
Kids keep you in check like that. Have you noticed that? Like, kids will keep you in check, where if you get too stuck up and you're like, oh, this isn't, or whatever. No, but I loved it. And I'm like, oh, right, it's a movie, it was good, it was great, it was good. Like, you get too hung up on that kind of thing. Kids will be like, no, man, there were lightsabers. Did you see the lightsabers? I'm like, yeah, there were lightsabers. Shit, you're right, that was awesome.
Well, let me ask you guys this as parents. Is there something that either of your kids are into that you just absolutely hate?
YouTube.
That's fair. I mean, I was thinking more like some kind of fandom or geeky thing. Yeah,
I think YouTube, but like, I mean, like the YouTube influencers.
Yes.
Like, it's a 19-year-old woman with three key lights opening packages that are sent to her for free and just monologuing forever.
It's horrifying.
That's tough. That's tough for me.
It's weird. And then,
it's easier when they're older.
Yeah, I'll be like, what are you watching?
When they were younger, I would have more answers.
Yeah, there's like, it'd be like watching something, and I'm like, what is that? And she's like, oh, this is the thing where Timmy watches the ice cube melt. And I'm like, what? And it's just a kid watching ice cube melt, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you can do that. You can get your own ice cube. We can watch it melt together. This is not why are we doing this? So, yeah, I feel that way. And there are certain things, but again, I will try to get behind just about anything like fandom wise that she is into, because like I want to have that connection, and I get, you know, deeper into it. And then if it's like something that ends up being bullshit, usually she calls it. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? I don't think this is that cool. And I'm like, all right, cool. What's next?
It's funny. I remember a time my kids were super into time. And then as Finn got decidedly older and the story got a little older, they both, and it happened again kind of with Steven Universe, where they both were like, oh, I'm not so into this anymore. Like, it's sad and difficult. And I liked it better when there were colorful elephants. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It outgrew them. So that was kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, yeah. The non sequitur thing usually works real well for my daughter. And then it was like she would get into like where it was that kind of stuff where they really were making it so story based and so like just, you know, ups and downs and highs and lows. And nah, I just kind of liked it when it was just, you know, a fire beast would pop out and then they would like put it out. That's about it.
Yeah. Yeah, but both of my kids watch YouTube, and that's weird. I understand some of it, you know, but even just like there's a thing, there's a performative monologue YouTubers do because it's content and you just have to keep talking, right? And it's just this kind of blathering on that my kids can do, and it's not who they are. It is like they're doing a thing.
Yeah.
Like sometimes Henry and I will play video games together and he'll be going and I'm like, buddy, it's not YouTube. We're just hanging out, you know, because it's like I am going to talk about everything the entire time and not leave a single thing to comment and not stop to breathe and not let you say anything because now I'm over here. And this is, and you know, like, and it's like, oh, you're doing YouTube, you know, whether or not they're aware of it or not.
Yeah. You got anything, Sequoia, that you're like, that you just absolutely can't stand as far as like?
No, I mean, my niece, yeah.
Or alternately, is there a thing that you were never into that you're afraid to bring up because everybody you know is super into it?
Oh,
well, we just had a conversation earlier.
We did.
About something I hate.
I don't even think you hate. No, I don't hate it. Rom the Space Knight.
I was giving everybody grief about Rom.
And he just, it didn't even, there's no real reason for it. He's just like, I can't stand Rom. It's like, stupid hating, face.
It's like hating capers or something. I hate parsley.
Why?
I don't hate Rom, all right?
The design's too simple. Too easy to look at.
You don't like Lord of the Rings? Lord of
Hobbits, man. A fucking elf gets on a horse, I fall asleep.
Wow. Shit, that's great, man. I don't like just any of the Dungeons and Noblets shit. It's not my thing. Like, I really don't. Like, I can't do it. I'm with you. I would never have said that. I'm glad you said it, because you can't tell people that you hate Lord of the Rings.
I don't consider myself a fantasy guy. I'll say, like, oh, I hate fantasy stuff, but then, like, I can rattle off 10 things that I like. It's kind of like, oh, I hate musicals, but then I'll name, like, oh, I like Grease and, you know.
Sure, yeah.
But, so it's like, I can't say I hate fantasy, but, I mean, I love Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, Conan the Barbarian. I mean, you know, the early 80s, I mean, post-Star Wars, man, that was just a great time for sword and sorcery type of stuff, and I mean those movies are always on HBO, so I mean,
oh no, I love that.
Same thing with Zeppelin. It's the thing I hate about Zeppelin is like it would be amazing and then you're fucking singing a Hobbit song. Oh, you're killing me.
It might just be Hobbits in general. Yeah, because he said Conan the Barbarian. Do you like, I love Conan, like I'm like totally fine with that.
Yeah Conan I loved, and what was the Gene Wolfe one? And there was another, like, yeah, that stuff was,
I mean, I liked all that. Yeah. Like Deathstalker and Ator, and I could get into any of that stuff. I don't know what it was about, Lord of the Rings that it was kind of like,
and it's funny. Cause like, I will go off on Dune the way Hobbit lovers go off on Lord of the Rings. So it's not like
Hobbit
I can't,
lovers.
It's not like just, oh no, honey, the thing you have to understand about the weather on Arrakis, you know, like I will.
Oh,
so
shit.
It's not like I don't have that ability, but what is Dune, but Lord of the Rings is with worms instead of spiders, right? Like,
sure. It's very long. It's like, the thing is too, it always kind of reminds, it's like, like the Grateful Dead. Like, it's like, just stop playing the damn solo. Just finish the song, god damn it. Like, just make the song 3 minutes, you know? Like, why does the song have to be so fucking long? Like, I don't want to... That was, like, my thing, like, I, you know, with Lord of the Rings. I was like, oh, good God, now we're in the Mist Forest. I was like, ugh.
See, I never read it. I just watched the movies, and I was surprised at how much I liked it.
Yeah,
this, you know?
Yeah, so, that's... I think most people felt that way.
I also... I tried one of the movies, but it was like the extended edition version.
The only extended one you need to watch is the second one. That's the best one. That's where it really works.
Yeah, but I had seen The Hobbit. Like, oh boy, there's two songs in the first Hobbit. But again, Henry was into it, so I'm like, all right, buddy, let's. Here we go. I'm gonna try for you, pal.
Yeah,
and I actually took a picture of myself watching The Hobbit for the first time, and I could feel myself making a face, and I was like, I don't know what face I'm making, but I know it's hilarious. So I will send you this photograph. I'm literally just like, I just look like, this is bullshit. I'm bored, and this is dumb.
It's your suffering face.
You see, I don't have kids, so I guess I never really had to put myself out there. Like, I mean, the consistent child I had throughout my life was my niece. And I think I kind of took to her like my mom and sisters took to me, where it's just like, look, I'll entertain your bullshit to a point. But like, if it means that I'm not entertained, we're just not doing it. So like, I told her, I'd take you to see whatever kids movie you want to see if I want to see it. But if it's just some dumb crap, I'm just going to avoid it. Ask somebody else to take you to go see it, or I'll buy your ticket and I'll go watch something else. But
See, that's beautiful that you got to do that. Like, that's if you, it's your daughter's
uncle's privilege, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's uncle's privilege.
That's uncle party, man.
I saw the Squeakle three times.
We're gonna go out for junk food. We're gonna watch something really bad, and then your parents are gonna have to deal with your stomach ache and your nightmares.
Yes,
but yeah. I envy you guys as far as like being able to introduce your kids to horror movies, because my niece, she just will not cater that whatsoever. Like, just, she cannot do scary films at all.
But you know, this was interesting when we watched Evil Dead, and it was kind of Henry's first like horror movie.
So wait, this is the first Evil Dead?
The second one, Evil Dead
2. Evil Dead 2. Oh God, the best one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You're like, and he was, I was laughing. I was responding to it, and he was kind of, he would laugh, but it was like performative. Like, it was like a half a second off. Like, he'd hear me laughing, so he would laugh. Right. And I could tell he was having trouble with it. But then at the end, we watched The Making Of, and at some point he turns to me and he goes, oh, these are just a bunch of best friends hanging out in the woods trying to make each other laugh. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
And then like it removed some degree of tension. And then he could laugh at the gross out stuff, and he could, like, it was the weirdest, like, it was so cool to kind of see his little head put that together.
That is so cool. Yeah. That's like one of those things. Like, my daughter was like that about, it wasn't even one particular movie. It was just like, I was showing her some, the Tom Savini stuff where he's like running the tubes, bloodlines and stuff like that, and doing the makeup. And she loved it. And like, from then on, she was never scared. She was always like, when she would watch, she'd be like, I bet I know how they're doing that. She's like, they got him down the middle, Tallulah. You know, the same damn thing.
Yeah. Tallulah loves to do that. Tallulah be like, okay, so there's a, and she, yeah, it's a weird, it's how, it's cool to see how they process that stuff.
It is. Yeah. And it just like, it makes you like, you're like, oh yeah, that's cool. I like that too. Like, that's like, I'm watching it that way, where I'm looking for that stuff.
No, there's a thing with the YouTube stuff where like, they'll watch reviews of things or walkthroughs of things. So like, Henry knows more about Friday the 13th and Halloween than I probably did at my peak slasher mania, but he's not seen a single one yet.
Huh. That is interesting.
And like, he will like watch a movie review and watch a walkthrough, so he knows where the stuff that he doesn't want to see is. Like the first time we watched Predator, he's like, oh, here come the bodies in the trees. And I didn't even remember that. And then sure enough, there's the skin, bodies in the trees. But he just knew, like, oh, the bodies in the trees. I'm not going to watch this part. But so he will, like, he loves, he's fascinated with, like, the mythos of it all.
Wow, that's that's very interesting too, because like I would do that for my daughter if I knew there was something in the movie. Like there'd be, she's kind of claustrophobic, so I'd be like, there is a scene where like Newt's in the, you know, and she's kind of like shoved in, and the she's down there by herself and everything. And then when we got to that part, it wouldn't be scary because she would be like, oh, this is that part. So I was kind of doing the same thing where I was like, I'm trying to preemptively take that, a little bit of the tension away from it, you know.
Both my kids have like clinical anxiety, like there's medication and therapy, and it's been a parenting's an adventure. But for a while, I would have to go see movies Henry wanted to see first and walk him through it so he could see it and enjoy. But I remember like Guardians of the Galaxy. I was like, and then this lady running with an alien lady's running with her alien baby, and you think she's going to die. She doesn't die.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay. But he needed to know that stuff. It didn't ruin his enjoyment of it.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if that's good or bad or what, because like, I remember like as a kid watching that kind of stuff and I think it fucked me up. So I think I could have used a little heads up, like where somebody said like, hey man, this can happen, but it's not, you know, you don't have to go home tonight and like stay up all night worrying about what this thing was, you know, it's, because like it messed me up. Like, so I think being able to do that it's not a bad thing.
I
want to hear you weigh in on it. It's like, well, yeah,
I mean, I remember, there's certain things I can recall from movies I watched as a kid that kind of stuck with me or disturbed me, but I don't know. I never really carried that stuff around as a kid. I mean, it's just because I knew it was all fake. I don't know. It's just one of those things where, and this is something I was talking to Danny about, like kind of lamenting, like nobody makes movies or TV shows about kids in peril anymore, because I felt like, you know, like I watched a lot of stuff and it was kind of like, God, I wish I was, you know, spelunking a cave and finding some old pirate ship or whatever, like the Goonies. Like, I wish there was danger in my life, you know, because I was the, you know, prototypical latchkey kid in the 80s. So, like, you know, I was just stuck. I wanted anything to happen. So, you know, watching that stuff was a release for me. I don't know. You know, I guess it never really bothered me much.
Nothing jacked you up. Was it, Matt, for you, is there like stuff like, were you like, oh, you know, like for me, it was like the book of Nightmare on Elm Street. Like I could handle the movie. I read damn book and the book scared me. I don't know why, but it was just like, it got me.
You remember, I remember the first 10 minutes of Raiders being real hard.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when I was, but I was pretty young then. V.
Oh God!
The first time the dude's peeling his fake skin off, I was out of my mind, and my mom was like, "No, keep watching." I'm like, "No, it's fine, keep watching." I'm like, ah. Red Dawn. I remember going to see Red Dawn with my dad, and terrified and paranoid the whole time. Like that was.
Yeah, that school scene where they land the parachutes out front, that messed me up.
The one dead kid at the window.
Yeah, the kid's hanging.
It still fucks me up.
Yeah.
You know what? I take it back. Day After Tomorrow. Do you remember that?
Day After Tomorrow?
That was
the day after.
Oh, yes, that's right. I'm sorry. Not the Roland Emmerich environmental disaster film. Yeah, the day after. Yeah, it was an ABC TV movie. I think it was like a two-night event, but basically I think Jason Robards, it was all-star cast, but the whole premise
nuclear
was
nuclear war in Lawrence, Kansas.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that shit.
Because I remember, like, I would watch the news as a kid, so like I remember just that whole thing of like imminent nuclear war just hanging over my head. Like,
that's what got you the big stuff.
Yes.
There's no claws and claws and monsters. You were just like, somebody's gonna press the fucking button one day.
Well, something my mom told me as a kid that always stuck with me. You know, like when I was really little. I mean,
you're
had
gonna
that
die in a nuclear home.
Well, it's
that might be it. That I think that's the root of it.
Sampler in the bathroom.
No. No, but, you know, I remember as a little kid, you have that irrational fear of monsters, ghosts, like all that shit. Because you don't know anything about the world. All that stuff is real. And I remember my mom told me, she said, the only monsters you need to be worried about are the ones that walk on two legs. And like that has always stuck with me.
That could be a fucking werewolf.
I know. Like, yeah, I could have got real technical. Like, what do you mean, the predator?
I said that. That's even more frightening. You'll always be able to kill the creatures on four legs. It's the humanoids you've got to watch out for.
Like kangaroos?
Marsupials. They're the things to be afraid of.
No, but I mean, I guess that was... You know, that was the thing.
No,
that was the thing. I mean, she just kind of instilled in me, you know, that there are human monsters that walk amongst us. Like, that's what you really have to be worried about.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, okay.
You're like, thanks. That's going to scare the shit out of me.
Now. Good news, bad news.
Yeah. Yeah.
the ultimate good news. One of the things I work through with my kids is like part of the reason we watch movies like this. Either scare us or thrill us is like it's like riding a roller coaster. It's the same thing. It's a safe way to get those feelings out. You can be scared and scream your head off and release all that tension that kind of accrues in your head. Like it's what we need from these things. There's these transformative experiences for us. And sometimes that works with them, and sometimes they're like, yeah, I don't need to be transformed. Fuck this experience. But oh man, right when I moved to North Carolina, I used to live in Rocky Mount before I moved to Charlotte. And it was literally the day we moved, and like we're done for the day. TV is hooked up. My mom and dad are sitting watching something. I go into the shower and I come out, and on the news is a newscast talking about a nuclear power plant that's just melted down in South Carolina. Mm. And the 300 mile radius, and I looked at them like and it was a movie, it was a TV movie, but it was a new town, so I didn't know what the anchors looked like, I didn't know what the news looked
like. Oh,
it was like the possible moment to first time I ever watched MTV was the what was his name, I am the god of hellfire. What was
shit, what is that? I know that.
I can't believe I'm forgetting the name. Hang on. But like literally after being told MTV is, you know, devil music and Satan, like, oh, come on. No, it's not. Look, I am the god of hellfire.
But I think that's the thing with all this stuff is just that excitement that peril brings. It's something about it that's enticing and alluring. I mean, I guess to try to bridge the whole horror movie, real world danger, and then let's, you know, bring in the music aspect of it is, you know, as a kid, when you're young and you think you're invincible, you know what I'm saying? It's like, that's how you test your mettle. It's like, what can I withstand?
Oh, I definitely felt that way. I'd be like, all right. I was like gearing up for it.
Oh, you read Stephen King? That's cool. Yeah, no, I read Stephen King. You read Dean Koontz? So you heard of Clive Barker? You read Clive Barker? You're like that kind of like...
Escalating. And just like, even as a kid, like being like, all right, I can do this. Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Here we go, motherfucker. Like, I'm getting ready for, like, a fight, you know? Like, I'm getting ready to, like go in the ring. Like, yeah. Put on Texas Chainsaw. Here we go. I'm going to make it through it, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And it felt triumphant at the end of it. If you got through the whole thing. Yeah! I fucking saw it. I can say I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing. That's how I took that stuff as a kid. It was just sort of like, what is my threshold? I mean, now that I'm older and, like, you know, imminent heart attacks or... you know, just whatever, random gunshots or pandemics, whatever the hell is going on in the world. It's sort of like, no, I have real shit to be worried about. So it's like,
originally worried about real shit and you continue to worry about real shit. There's like nothing ever scared you, like fable wise, or there's no lore about it. You're like, oh, is it nuclear bomb? There's this, there's a. Somebody get me on the street?
Well, I mean, it creeped
Jonathan
me out.
Jonathan put me in the candy van?
It creeped me out as a kid. And I mean, you know, I didn't sleep well at night. But still, you know, if I woke up the next day, I was like, hey, I made it. You know, so that's sort of how it is now at 43. Is I wake up every day, it's like, hey, I made it.
Right.
I had a friend that was so fucked up. There's the day after. And then there's a BBC thing called Threads, which was real gnarly.
Okay.
I've never seen it. I've always wanted to.
It's fucking grim. But I had a friend who was so fucked up by seeing those when he was like 8, he couldn't sleep without a TV on and a fan on because he was convinced when the electromagnetic pulse came, he would hear it. He could, the things would cut off and he would wake up and he would know the end of the world was coming and he'd be awake for it. Like he could not, like it literally could not sleep, a fan right at his head and a TV on all the time.
It doesn't sound that far off from, I can absolutely believe that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mistakes were made.
All right, Matt, we're not going to hold you up. Oh, is this, can we start it? Is this the beginning?
This bullshit.
What were we talking about? Like, we just got off on everything. I loved it. I don't know. Did you have questions?
Well, I guess we have not actually interviewed Matt the man himself. I mean, we've talked about...
I feel like I know him better than ever.
Oh, yeah. No, I love you.
We're all aching for a social interaction after 3 or 4 weeks of holding up. But whatever, man. What do you got for me? Hit me.
Dude, I'm thriving in this bullshit. I love it.
You do seem to be very happy. You're like, it came to fruition. I was worried about shit, and here it is.
No. Federally mandated plan canceling is kind of my purge.
Yeah.
Like, I wait for it. I've waited for this my whole life. I can finally be who I truly am on the inside.
He's like, we got to do a podcast. I'm like, all right, man. It's okay. All right.
Well, no, I mean, I guess the interesting thing is, you know, how this whole interview in and of itself just came about. I mean, you know, obviously you are a fan of Holy Mountain Printing, and we are a fan of yours. And you know, you've bought some items from here. I'm assuming you're really into metal.
Yeah. I forgot to take my fake name off of like PayPal or whatever, but I got a note. Yeah, you guys saw my invoice and were very generous. Like, I got a note in with my stuff, and it was like oh, right, of course. Like it's that feeling of like, oh, we'd be friends. We'd this kind of thing. Like, you would show up and we would just start talking, and then it's an hour and a half later. Like, oh, that's about right. We have friends in common through Heroes Con, I believe. Like, I believe it was the Carolina connection that put you in my. Oh, maybe it was Rico. Maybe it was Latour. Like, one of those kind of Charlotte guys. I'm like somewhere on Instagram got me, and that just fell in love with like just the design work and the sensibility of the whole thing. It clearly like. These are dudes my age. This is all extremely my shit.
Yeah, that's Danny and Joel. Like, just so that you don't think that's us, like doing that stuff. Danny and Joel are both. We're all like many feet away. But you guys
I've seen
Joel.
I've seen pictures of Dan. I knew you guys were both not hairy enough to be Daniel. Oh yeah.
And peeping in.
But just like it's like the work is so great, and there's such a. When you're, I think, when it's in the blood, like it is with people like us, you can tell because there's an attention to detail, and a care and concern for craft that isn't just like product. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just like the stickers are dope. Like even even the stickers are cool. Like
the stickers. Are so cool.
I just kind of. The first time I found the site, and then just to like, even to like using the website. As a like analog Spotify, she's like, well, shit, I like all these bands. Who's that? I've never heard of that. Like, let me go look for, you know, like it's just grown what I've listened to so much just because, you know, well, shit, if you're into all this dope shit and you're saying that's dope shit, I should go check that out too.
That is fucking awesome to hear.
Great.
Well, you know, and I guess the thing for me is something prior to this interview, I was reading up. And reading other interviews you had done and stuff like that, and some that you talked about, it was a 2011 interview you did for with Book Slut, but you were talking about the whole thing about throwing up a flare to try to find your own kind and people who were like-minded, and it's something I've always kind of said as far as like my friendship with Danny and Joel, and you know, having worked here at a you know for one period, was that it's all about like finding your tribe, and your tribe can be multifaceted, you know.
Mm. Yeah, no, it. I remember the first time I saw Yo Gabba Gabba, and it was like a month before my son was born. And I had this feeling that I'd never had before of like, oh, right, it's our turn now. Like, we're the grownups, we're the ones who are going to start making shit. Like Yo Gabba Gabba was so like Biz Markie teaching kids beats. That's Biz with the beat of the day. of course, like, of that's so great. And like, I went to see them. I took my son to see Yo Gabba Gabba. Is one of my top five live shows of all time. was Yo Gabba Gabba live?
Yes.
Like, ironically enough, Yo Gabba Gabba is how I got introduced to Boris.
Really? Yes.
They were on an episode. Yeah. They were doing like a counting song or whatever, like a number song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's an amazing time to be bringing up a kid. That's the thing. Like, it really has been like just like you're like, God, it's gotten even better. Like the past like 5 years have been like, oh my God, look at this shit. Stranger Things. You're shit, this is amazing.
At some point last summer, or like I don't remember, there were like six fucking comic book movies out. There was a Star Wars movie coming. There was a Star Wars show. And like, I wouldn't believe it if I went back in time and talked to the kid who had like the Empire Strikes Back VHS with all the fucked up audio. Like, no. It's going to be everywhere. Like, what? Yeah.
It's impossible.
No. There's going to be an Avengers versus Thanos movie. It's literally going to make $4 billion. Would not believe if I would not believe it coming from my own mouth if I was 12 years old. You know what I mean?
Like, no,
but it's such a crazy time.
But I have to also point out, and I don't know if your kids are aware of this, but I kind of want to make the listeners, you know, aware of it, that you and your wife, you know, amongst a group of others, you guys are pretty much solely responsible for recreating the modern Marvel universe as everybody knows it. I mean, I feel like so many of you. I mean, especially, you know, Kelly Sue with Captain Marvel. I mean, like, because the thing that they brought me to you was your run of Invincible Iron Man, because I think what the movie came out in April and that book dropped in like June or July. And like,
yeah, it was meant to come out. Yeah.
And I remember that. And I was like, this book is so right on time. And I was just like singing its praises, like, yo, if you like that movie, go buy that fucking book, because it. Like, it doesn't skip a beat. If you're not familiar with Iron Man whatsoever, other than the movie, like, this book, like, just, it spills right into
it. Thank you. It's funny, it was the other Iron Man book. At the time, there was another Iron Man book. We were the other one. The idea was, hey, there should be an Iron Man number one when the movie comes out. And I was brand new. I had written four things. Like, I was very new at Marvel. And just wrote the book I wanted to read and got, I remember seeing the movie, and I was writing issue 5 when the movie came out, and I had no special access. I saw the trailer when everyone else saw the trailer. I knew nothing, just the trailer and what I wanted, and had the feeling at the end of the movie of like, God, I wish I was writing Iron Man. I am writing Iron Man. And getting to go home and write the big fight that was in issue 5. Like, it was just this, like, a bunch of sensibilities all kind of linking up at the same time, and a lot of really smart editors and a lot of really great producers. I sat in a room with Kevin Feige during the making of Iron Man 2 and watched him do like it was like A Beautiful Mind, where he talked about how they were going to get to the Avengers, and like he saw it in such a way that I like, oh yeah, you're going to fucking do it. You're going to absolutely do it. And it was, and like, you could tell he knew no one believed it. And at that point, Iron Man worked, and they had Cap was coming and Thor was coming, and they were starting to write Iron Man 2. And he knew how they were going to get to Avengers. And once you're at Avengers, like wow. You're a guy who's thought about this like us every day since you were 8. And now you're ready. And like, it was just the greatest, like, it was really cool. It was really cool to be a part of, even in the most minuscule of ways.
Well, the thing I always appreciated about your run on Iron Man was because I'm like a huge Warren Ellis fan. And the thing, like, reading your run, I was like, this dude fucking knows science, or at least like you're able to convey like real world scientific application and how that would work with an idea such as Iron Man. And I watched that documentary about Ellis and saw you and your wife and like you guys, you know, meeting on the Ellis forums and all that stuff. So I was like, oh, okay, well, I understand, like, you know, where this guy is coming from. And I've like followed your stuff, you know, ever since. So like, I'm a fan of your work, man. Danny, you know, loves your Hawkeye. Your Hawkeye.
Oh, right.
Me too.
Right
on. Yeah.
Thank you. There's a, it was a relief to be done with Iron Man because I would read as much as I could about emergent technologies and new sciences and then figure out a way to kill people with them in a comic. And it puts you in a place after a while.
Imagine so.
But we had started to predict all of these things that were going to happen. And it was like with that, I wasn't trying to like prognosticate, but like Dubai, that was an arc. What happened in Dubai was an arc in Iron Man 2 years before Dubai. All this kind of stuff started. Oh, here's how you could turn this thing into a weapon, and look at this, and here's how you can weaponize drones, and look, here's how you can turn everybody's phone into like that kind of thinking of just like if I'm not on. It's amazing I'm allowed on airplanes between the stuff I've had to search for Iron Man and the stuff I've had to search for Sex Criminals. It's a miracle they let me on airplanes at all.
You're definitely on some watch list.
I remember Googling biggest dam in China, comma, demolition, explosion. Like how much explosive would I need to blow up the biggest dam in China? Search. Like let's see if anyone's watching.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say also I do enjoy Sex Criminals because that's probably genuinely the funniest comic book I have read. And it's hard for a comic book to make me laugh. But when I got like the first issue, when you're explaining all those weird made up sexual positions and brimping, and I always, whenever I have to explain that I'm trying to sell that book to somebody, I just say like, I show them that scene.
Sex Criminals was my daughter's Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
What?
Like that was like her like thing. She saw it on
Thank
the
you.
Shelf. Yeah, yeah. It's a total compliment. She saw it on the shelf and she wanted. You know, she's like, I want to read Sex Criminals. I'm like, you are like 9. I was like, you know, no, you know. And then like, and it would just go on and on, and it'd be another year had passed, and she'd say, I want to read Sex Criminals. So last year, she got to read Sex Criminals, and she blew through the entire thing. And she said to me, she was like, it's everything I wanted it to be. And I was like, God damn, that's amazing. I was like,
I'm her leather face. I'm her
you're
leather face.
Goddamn leather face. Yeah, man. She was like, she was showing me stuff, and she was laughing about it. And she was like, it was super nice for me, too, because it was comedy, and it was sexual, but it was like she was able to like, we just don't normally have those conversations, but it was something where she knew we'd both read that kind of stuff, and she was going to tell me about this joke, and it felt like a moment for us. So it was, yeah, that was thanks to you. So it was very, very cool. But you're definitely her leather face.
I always have to explain that, like, for a book about sex, it is not sexy.
No.
Like, there is nothing purient, unless emotional commitment turns you on. There is nothing arousing any book, you know. So for a book this filthy and with this many naked people, and thank you, funny, and funny, and comics funny is not actually funny. Like when you think about like there's so few actually funny comics to me that like the challenge was, can I write in something that is actually funny and not just comics funny?
Yeah.
And like, so that, thank you. That's a huge compliment.
Yeah.
And a fucking nightmare to have to have dealt with for 5 years. Cause it's really hard.
Well, like I said, man, it's a hilarious book, and I know you're bringing it to an end, pretty shortly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm about to write the last issue.
Oh really? Okay.
I just finished Jimmy Olsen. I finished the last issue of Jimmy Olsen yesterday. I'm going to finish Sex Criminals like next week.
Right on.
So, and then you've got, what was it? Adventure Man coming up?
Yeah, Adventure Man, one day when printing presses, distributors, and comic shops open again, we'll have a book called Adventure Man. And that is very much like a all ages, like very unlike anything I've ever written. Like it is my attempt at doing like Raiders, like just an adventure comic for the whole family. Like, you know, and the concept there is that there was like a pulp hero that was real. A lady, a bookseller who just knows him as a character from books, discovers that it was real. And then she starts to inherit the mantle. But as she starts to become this new kind of incarnation of the pulp hero, all the villains start to come back. So like, there's like an outbreak of menace in the modern world. And, you know, But it's a very much like, I wanted to write an adventure comic for my daughter. So like it could not be more different than Sex Criminals.
That's awesome though. I was going to ask if there was stuff specifically that you did, you know, with your kids in mind or with anybody in mind, like if you're like, oh, this is for my wife or this is for my dad, you know.
She found Wonder Woman when she was 2, and I went out, and it's different now. The world is very different. It's crazy how different the world is just 6 years later. But I went to Target, and they had a little bath toy, a Wonder Woman bath toy, and a halter top for adult women with breasts. That was the only pieces of Wonder Woman merchandise in Target. And I went home and was like, I am going to write Wonder Woman for you. And I realized DC would never, ever let me write Wonder Woman. So I'm going to do my Wonder Woman. And it became what ended up being Odyssey, which also was not Wonder Woman. But then I was like, all right, Odyssey is something else. Now I'm going to do Wonder. I'm going to do an adventure comic. And it's about a mom. And she's, you know, it's a single mom. It's like the mom is the hero. And like, it's just let me fill a space I've never done before. We'll see how it goes.
Right.
And Terry and Rachel Dotson are doing the most amazing work of their career.
He's coloring.
He's doing final colors on the issue now and like sending pages every day. And just like, it's just so gorgeous. I can't believe it. And the first issue was going to be like 72 pages. It's $3.99 and it is 100% returnable to comic shops.
Damn.
So it's the price of a regular book, 4 times as long, and no risk for any shop to give it a shot.
And you could really only do that with Image. I mean, like they seem to be the only ones who kind of push that.
They're the only ones who will let you throw money away like that. Yeah.
Fine, if that's how you want to look at it.
Well, I mean,
priming the pump, right? Oh, so it's priming the pump too. I mean, you get somebody 72 pages, and you read that thing and love it, then you're like, oh man, I'm like a fan now. That's getting 3 comics, you know.
Yeah, you know, the market is really different now than it was when we launched. The last kind of wave of launches that I had, is the world is way different. Comics are way different. I've watched, you know, the market is, who fucking knows now. I want to go on the record and say that this is an opportunity for us to reboot an industry.
Thank you.
And that's really exciting.
Amen.
Thank you.
This is, we're going to be back. Comics are going to be back. Comic stores are going to be back. We get to decide what that looks like. And we're going to have millions of people fucking starving for new shit. And like, as long as any of us can, as long as any of us have the health and the financial wherewithal to bank material and be ready, because when the all clear comes and we get to go back out into the world, everyone is going to be ready for hope and dreams and imagination and adventure and all the stuff you don't get when you are shut inside your own fucking house for 6 months. So like, I'm terrified of like all of us. I'm worried like all of us. I don't know what the direct market is going to look like. I don't know what comic shops are going to, how people can survive as long as possible. But I know for a fact we're back. We're going to be back with a vengeance. And like, I can't wait. I cannot fucking wait.
God damn, that's inspirational.
Thank you, man. I needed to hear that.
Trust I can rely on you this fall.
Damn. We're convinced.
Yeah.
I really do think it is going to be it. That's the truth. Like, people are going to want new kind of, gotta have it. They gotta have it, man. Like, I've gotta have it already, like jonesing for comic books, where I'm like, you know, like, what can I watch? What can I do?
Oh, dude, I got sad. I was going through the latest previews catalog, and I was like, I still filled out my order because I was like, hey, it'll be valid one day. But yeah, I was going through looking at all the stuff that I had been reading. I was like, oh God, I forgot there's that Alien series that's based on the original screenplay, and now they're doing a Predator series, and it's just like, oh, I'm gonna miss, you know, fucking Hickman on X-Men, and it's just all this shit I'm not gonna be able to read. And
it's, but it'll be coming around. Yeah, it's, that's the thing. We get out of it. Yeah.
And like, I hope we can rebuild ourselves and reinvent ourselves a little bit smarter. You know, the direct market is a system that was built in 1979. For a world of 1979, and like, it's time, like, we can be smarter, we can be better partners, we can be ready for the actual 21st century, and like, service a world this has been really amazing to me, talking about that feeling of, oh, it's our turn, right? Brian Bendis and David Walker here in town teach a comics writing course at Portland State, and I guest lecture every time. They've done it for about 10 years now. And the first time I went, I just like wanted to know in the room, how many people want to talk about Marvel and DC kind of work for hire stuff? Like, what is my lecture going to be about? And every hand went up, right? Everyone in the class knew who Brian was. Everyone was there for fucking Josh Williamson was in that class. That class was where Josh Williamson got his start. Literally, that's the first time I met Josh.
Wow.
As Brian's student. Everyone was there for Brian. The last time I went, two hands went up. One guy was like, I just need a whole job right now. I'll write Batman. I don't give a shit. Everyone else's response was, why would I want to write a comic he made up? Right?
So wow. There's a generation
of 18 and 19 year olds who grew up reading Reyna, who grew up reading, knowing Walking Dead and Scott Pilgrim, and grew up with manga, grew up in a world where you could get comics at Target. You didn't have to go to the Android's dungeon every Wednesday and pay $4 for a pamphlet, right? Like it never, these kids want to be Raina Telgemeier. No one wants to be, it's crazy.
That's so like kind of a beautiful thing. Like you want to create, you want to make your own stuff. You want to like, just, why would I write somebody else's character? That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, dude,
it gave me a lot of hope for the direct market.
Yeah.
Well, dude, at the risk of sounding like gushing, like, you know, but I feel like that's sort of what you and Hell Brubaker, you know, what you guys really embody. I mean, because you were guys who started off like, you know, in the indie market. Then you guys mm-hmm. went to the mainstream, built that up. And like at one point, I'm assuming y'all were just like, fuck it. We want to go back to doing our own thing. And it's just sort of like, you know, like you didn't treat working for Marvel as the be all end all. That wasn't the goal. The goal was to do your own thing, and you guys did your own shit, and it's fucking fantastic. And you know, I mean, not to crap on DC, I mean, they're a great company, but you know, Image to me has become what Vertigo used to be back in the 90s. You know, you don't have that mature, sure. original, adult comic content anymore, and the only place really to get it is Image. I mean, there are other publishers doing it, but I mean, just that whole wave of stuff that, you know.
No, if it was 1993, Saga would be a Vertigo book.
Yeah.
Right. Sex Criminals wouldn't be anything, but like, like that
I don't
kind
think
of.
They can do that.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. No one would have. Everyone now says, oh, of course we would have. If you would have, no one would have. No one fucking would have. But Eric Stevenson at Image was the only person that would have said.
Title alone, such a brilliant title, but like, man, nobody's gonna do that.
No.
Yeah, that's like, it was stroke of genius.
Too much semen. I remember at Image Expo, he put the second burp, which was really a guy standing in this like white ocean. He goes, Matt, what's this? A stage of like 3,000 people. I'm like, well, it's semen, Eric. He's standing in an ocean of sublimated cum. Why? Not quite bulletin material. You know?
I mean, I don't know. Can't really top that, right? I mean, I feel like that's a pretty great take it
Oceans
out.
Of sub- semen is a good place to go, is a good exit point.
I mean, I love it. It's a leave them wanting more, top hat. Da, da, da. Man, thank you so much, Matt. Thank you for being here and for doing this. I know you got stuff to do, but I really appreciate it. It was super great talking
pleasure.
To you.
And I super needed it. I super thank you because I super, super needed it. This was like good for my heart, good for my soul. And Daniel, if you're back there, thank you for everything. You guys, yes. This was dope.
Yeah.
Good to talk to you guys.
And thanks.
Dude, let me know. Let me know what I can do for you. You guys need anything? Let me know. I'll send it to you.
Well, hey, like I said, if you're ever in the North Carolina area, you know, let us know, man. I mean, you know, you talked about wanting to hang out.
I'm from Charlotte. I assume Heroes Con is going to be canceled for the year.
Yeah.
Seems
which
like
I can't really. Conceive of.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's such a hard thing to imagine. I can't imagine that they're going to be up in June, but like, yeah, man, next time I'm back, I would love to do like, do a barnstorming Carolina tour.
It was all I could do not to bring up Rocky Mount because you mentioned that, and I was like, did you know all the crazy stories about Rocky Mount? I went to the comic book store there like a year ago, and they were like, you remember when all the bodies got washed down the hill and got stuck behind the Dunkin' Donuts? And I was like, no, I don't. How would I remember that? It was like, they're like, and you know the snakes and that live in the old mall downtown that sunk into the ground? It was like, in Rocky Mount? Oh, they had story after story. I wanted to see how much of it, you know, you had heard of.
So basically you
there,
and...
There's a serial killer in Rocky Mount.
Yeah. Yeah,
like Rocky Mount Street had a serial killer.
I didn't even know about that part. Yeah.
You and Mary Elizabeth Winstead, you both got out.
We could just do a podcast on Rocky Mount, you know, just be like,
she's Rocky Mount.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, now I got my opening line. Great.
Thanks again, Matt. Have a great night, man.
My pleasure, you guys. Stay safe. Stay healthy. I'll talk to you soon.
You too.
Strange. Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.